This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of December 17th, 2018. I'm Mason King. Happy holidays, everyone. With me again in the podcast studio is Anthony Shutley, IBJ's technology reporter. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Because we're deep into the holiday season, I can't help but play this quick snippet from a classic movie that we normally see in the holidays.
The great Oz has spoken.
Oh.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Well, that, of course, is the Wizard of Oz. It's the moment the true identity of the great wizard is revealed to be an unassuming elderly gentleman who dropped into Oz via balloon to run the Emerald City. And today, we're going to talk about Bob Stutz, who in some ways is an equally mysterious figure, at least until last week. He's 62 years old. He dropped into Indianapolis 2 years ago to run the Salesforce marketing cloud from his office in the tallest building in the state, the Salesforce Tower. Now, with this comparison, I don't mean to imply that Bob Stutz has anything to hide or any kind of malevolent intent, but it does feel like a good comparison in that Salesforce occupies an elevated position in Indianapolis, like literally and from a business perspective, without many people really understanding what it is. And that mystery is compounded a bit by Stutz himself, who is a legend in the software business, but prefers to keep a very low profile. Now, Anthony, you featured Stutz in a front page story in our last issue, kind of pulling back the curtain, so to speak. How easy was it to get the interview?
I'm so glad you asked that question because, you know, for those who aren't in the journalism industry, you know, it's I guess you may not know how these things come about. But generally speaking, the bigger the company, the higher the profile, the more hoops you have to jump through. I mean, a lot of interviews, you can just pick up the phone, call the person, either director or through a communications person, and have the interview. With Salesforce, you know, they have 30,000 employees. They're headquartered out of San Francisco, although Indianapolis is their second biggest location. So I go in to the interview with this idea that, quite frankly, that Bob Stutz is going to be a high-level guy, used to dealing with the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, and he's going to be stuffy. I couldn't have been further from the truth, all of that. So, you know, I walk in, and Bob is casually dressed. He has just a plain button-down shirt, a decorative scarf, you know, very workaday looking. And while Salesforce's office looked like a five-diamond hotel, Bob's office looks more like a Howard Johnson's. I mean, it's very, it's more practical than opulent, that's for sure. And it's relatively small. I mean, you know, I've been into a lot of C-suite offices, and his is minuscule in comparison to some of the other ones I've been into. He was very laid back. He didn't have anything written down. I mean, unless he has an identical memory, he didn't have anything prepared and no prepared statements. He leaned far back on the couch, put his feet up, and answered every single question I asked with really sincerity and candor. I was fairly amazed.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And pleased.
Yeah. Now, we're going to play some snippets from your interview in a minute. Let me ask you quick. Now that we have this new vision of Bob Stutz, is it fair to say that he is one of the most powerful executives in the city?
I would say at this point, you know, Bob has lived here for 2 years, but he's a Buffalo native. He's you know, cut his teeth at 22 years in the military, spent a lot of years Germany and other places overseas. Then he went out to California. He worked for Hewlett Packard, Microsoft, and regular who's who. So, like, internationally, globally, and certainly throughout the U.S., he's extremely well-known. Some people call him the brightest mind in CRM is something you'll hear a lot when you hear about Salesforce. It's a customer relationship software. He is supposed to be one of the brightest minds in that realm. But locally, he's still a pretty new commodity. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns about him, even in the tech community. Not that many people have met him yet, although he's getting out there more. So yeah, it's a real dichotomy. His, you know, internationally global brand in the tech field, but locally not so much.
So one of the first things that you basically ask him is, who are you? And here's what he had to say.
I spent 22 years in the military and then got into high tech, and spent a lot of time as an executive in companies like, you know, Siebel Systems, SAP, which is I moved to Germany for 6 years. Worked at SAP, sat on the board there, and then came back to the States, worked at HP, Microsoft. I still don't know how Mark Benioff talked me into coming to Salesforce, but I ended up at Salesforce and ultimately ended up in Indianapolis.
Did you get tech training in the military? How did you come
no,
by the tech
so
training?
No, so I've actually Sort of an interesting story. I dropped out of high school when I was 16. On my 17th birthday, I was on a bus going to Fort Dix, New Jersey. You know, got my GED while I was in the military, and then took me quite a while to get my bachelor's degree. It took me like 10 years to get a bachelor's degree because I was deployed all the time. And then last 2 years, I sort of got hurt and was recovering in San Francisco. And then I did a master's degree while I was recovering and ended up, that's how I got into the high-tech business. But I actually don't have any real high-tech training. I taught myself pretty much everything.
Really?
Yeah.
So you taught yourself like coding?
Coding,
and all that sort of
everything. Yeah.
What were you doing in the Army?
So I was my specialties was weapons and intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in special operations almost my whole time.
So you can make us disappear without a trace, probably.
I was also a professional interrogator for most of that time.
Okay, so he sounds like a pretty capable guy.
Yeah, so that was the first bombshell was how personable he was and how willing he was to talk about his personal side. I mean, Salesforce had kind of let it be known that there was some sensitivity about his, you know, revealing aspects of his personal life. And, you know, that's fairly normal, again, for people who haven't been in the media. High-level guys like Bob Stutz, you know, the head of Eli Lilly, Anthem, whatever, they're not all that interested in, you know, telling you maybe their spouse's name, their kid's name. They just want to protect themselves and their family. That's understandable. But so my mouth was agape when Bob revealed that he had quit high school when he was 16 years old. He was regularly truant. One year he missed 100 days of school. He said he would be dropped off at the front door and walk straight out the back door. You know, all these things were a real revelation and to me very refreshing and kind of gave some real enlightenment about the man.
So when we say he's a legend in the software business, I mean, what is he known for? What is his reputation?
So not only is he an expert in this customer relationship management software realm, and he was funny. He said he was surprised he ever came to work for Salesforce because he had made so much money competing against Salesforce and its boss, Mark Benioff. So when I talked to analysts, you know, from California to New York, the first thing that they said, and particularly one of the analysts I talked to from New York said, when you hire Bob Stutz, you're making a serious statement. And the statement is that you're serious about what you're doing, you're serious about customer service. He also said that you're admitting to some degree that you have some issues. And I'm not taking shots at previous, you know, marketing cloud regimes, but Salesforce had made a lot of acquisitions, and a lot of that affected the Indianapolis division of marketing cloud. And I think that there were some issues in integrating those things. And so basically, you can look at Bob Stutz as a genius, Mr. Goodwrench. He's a fix-it man. And he was brought in here to assimilate those acquisitions and to get the processes running more smoothly. And the growth that they've had here speaks to that. It's been straight line growth since he's been here.
So here's the $5 billion question, and the one that we almost have to ask ourselves every week when we write about these guys. How do we describe what it is that Salesforce Marketing Cloud does?
So Salesforce Marketing Cloud, and they're sensitive about this because what they don't do is they don't sell what I would call an impregnated database. That is to say, a database with a bunch of information about somebody's clients or about an industry. They sell you a tool that is an empty database, what I would call an empty database. Their software essentially allows Salesforce clients to gather information on customers. So let's just say their customer is making vases. Let's make this easy. They would allow Salesforce software would allow how many vases they purchase, what kinds of vases they purchase, when they purchase those vases, and then their software would allow you to target them with future messages, to market to them in a certain way, to give you certain offers, to keep track of and manage, you know, all the purchases you've ever made. You know, I'm simplifying this, but that's essentially what Salesforce's software does.
I'm the vase maker. It gives me many, many different digital options for learning about my customer and then contacting them.
Essentially, yes. So before, you had a simple software package that allowed you to track, I've sold 80 vases this year, and you might have, I've sold 10 to John Doe and 9 to Jane Doe. but you didn't have any way to turn that into action. And it was very laborious to pull that information out yourself and then decide on actions. With Salesforce's advanced software, they help you to do that in an automated and an efficient way, much, much faster than would be humanly possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we asked Stutz, or I should say you asked Stutz, for some more concrete examples. Here's some of what he said.
And in other industries, you know, we work very closely with the Pacers on their fan experience. This year we did a lot of stuff with them over the off season and helping them to learn how to engage better with their consumers, both outside of Banker's Life and inside of Banker's Life. And you know, we've also worked with the Colts over the off season to help them, and it's paying off. It's that fan engagement becomes much more effective, much more, and we do a lot of that with, yeah. You know, and helping, you know, we have big customers like Ticketmaster, right? And you know, Ticketmaster Live Nation, helping them to give their fans the best experience possible, from everything from the time they sign up and register and buy tickets for a concert, all the way through when they step into that venue and when they're in that venue, and you know, and that sort of engagement that happens, right, that makes that experience a much better experience, which then, you know, you're always willing to want to go back and buy another ticket, right, because you had such a great experience, right?
So tell us about Salesforce's local presence.
The company has 1,700 employees. That's 700 more than they had when they established their presence here by acquiring ExactTarget for $2.5 billion in 2013. Marketing Cloud is an important division for Salesforce. If you look at all the projections, if you look at all the analyst figures, Marketing Cloud combined with Commerce Cloud, which is based out of Boston, not only is growing at the fastest rate, but has the biggest upside. It has the biggest potential growth, the biggest projected growth going forward. Most of their local employees work in the Marketing Cloud division, and most are located in the Salesforce Tower, which used to be the Chase Tower until Salesforce arranged in 2016 to move its marketing headquarters into the building and make it signature tenant. So, that, you know, look, when you walk into Salesforce Tower, you get a sense very quickly that this company is growing. And you get a real concrete example of their growth. So they have obviously hundreds of employees working in the tower on 6 floors. By the end of January, they're going to be in 5 more floors. Now, we're not talking about small floors, 21,000 square feet per floor. So that's about 105,000 square feet that they're going to be taking over in a matter of, you know, months here. So that's how fast they're expanding. Again, I said they had 1,700 employees. That's 700 more than they had just a few years ago. And by 2021, they're going to have nearly 2,200 employees. Now, a couple of sources had talked to me about the possibility that Salesforce could and has plans to occupy all 49 floors in the tower, which seems ridiculous to me in some respects. But I asked Bob Stutz that question, and he did not dismiss it, which is fairly telling. Just think about that for a second. We're talking about 21,000 square feet, give or take, for 49 floors. Do the math.
Yeah,
and they're talking about inquiring, inhabiting, occupying all of that space, which is, you know, fairly phenomenal.
You know, it occurs to me that Stutz has as good and wide a perspective as can be imagined on the challenges that Central Indiana faces in attracting tech talent. I mean, those people that would be in, you know, a million square feet of space. And we've been talking about this for years, right? I mean, it really came into focus last month when Amazon gave Indy the cold shoulder for the HQ2 projects. And what was really interesting to me was that Stutz told you, that there isn't much of a problem with attracting young entry-level talent. So what's the problem?
The problem is that mid-level and senior-level talent, because there's just not a lot of it here. And so that forces companies like Salesforce to hunt in other markets. Now, when you go hunting for that kind of talent, you're hunting in Seattle, Austin, Texas, Silicon Valley. Those are extremely competitive markets. Those are extremely desirable places to live. And I'm not saying that Indianapolis isn't, because I'm a 52-year lifelong resident here. But it's not an easy thing to draw those people into the Midwest, into Indianapolis, despite the things that we have here. You know, Mr. Stutz told me that they're just now starting to have some good success with that. In the last 6 months, he said they had drawn people from New York, Salesforce Marketing Cloud had. They had drawn people from Seattle and Austin, Texas. And so we're gaining headway, but Bob was clear, there's still an issue. We still need more. We still, as a an ecosystem here, as a community, Indianapolis needs to find a way to bring in more mid-level talent.
Yeah, and you asked specifically about Indianapolis from a reputational perspective, and here's what he had to say.
What do you think the problem is? Is it reputational? Is it just we don't have...
It's not reputational. It's really more around, you know, if you think about high-tech people, right? They tend to go to cities where there's a lot of movement, right? Because a lot of tech people move around a lot. And, you know, typically if you look at places like, you know, Silicon Valley, and then you go to Seattle, or you look at Austin, Texas. You know, the reality is, you know, if you want to go work somewhere else, you have a choice. If you're a mid-level, senior-level person and you come to Indianapolis, the problem is, you know, if you don't like what you're doing or you really want to change, there's not a whole lot of places to go.
Yeah.
In the software industry. And so I think that's the thing where, you know, that's why it's a little difficult for some of that mid-level, senior-level talent to come here. But, you know, we're starting to see a pickup of more and more people coming out here. I think, you know, the more the city and the state does to promote it, which, to be perfectly honest, Indiana doesn't do a good job of promoting, you know, the fact that Indianapolis is a great place to be. It's a vibrant city, it has a great youth movement, it has a lot of things that, you know, between the sports and the, you know, the universities and everything else, great hospital, healthcare, right? There's not enough promotion of that. And I think that has sort of, it doesn't help.
Now, that's a pretty interesting critique. Now, Tony, you, until recently, you covered hospitality and tourism for IBJ. Is that a fair point?
So I think there's a real cultural issue with that in Indianapolis and also Indiana. You know, part of the Hoosier mentality is to be mild, unassuming, and really have its ego in check. And I think in other parts of the country, they've been more brash and more boastful. Locations in California, locations on the East Coast, that's not a problem. So they're very bold and they're very aggressive in their marketing. And it's really been difficult for Indianapolis and Indiana because it's not in the DNA. It's not in the Hoosiers' DNA to beat their chest and pound their chest. But sometimes to be heard over the din, you have to yell, as unnatural as that may be. And so for Bob Stutz, guy who's, you know, raised in the East Coast, cut his teeth in the military, where there's certainly lots of yelling, and then, you know, cut his teeth professionally on the West Coast, he is used to that kind of aggressive marketing.
Now, there's one other interesting point he made about the ways that the state might be getting in its own way with recruiting tech talent. Let's take a listen to this.
So the number one complaint we hear from people that we bring from other states is that they have to take the driving test again here in Indiana, because Indiana does not have a reciprocality agreement with other states,
yeah,
like California has and Texas has, and actually almost I think every state in the union has it except Indiana. So Indiana, you have to take the written driver's test again in order to get your license, even though you may have had a license for 30 years. It doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Wow.
It's little things like that people don't realize are pain points for people in the tech industry who have to move, right? And so it's little things. The more the state can do to ease that burden, it'll make it easier to get people into the state.
Wow, that's pretty fascinating. What did you think about that?
The driver's license thing was really a hot button issue for him. I could tell it during the interview. I can tell, you know, re-listening to the interview. Because the people in the tech industry are so apt to move, and not in a global company like Salesforce, you're moving employees from other locations within Salesforce, and you're also hiring outside of Salesforce, that I think every little thing can potentially add up to big pain points. So you wouldn't think that it would be a massively big deal to go down and get a new driver's license. But I think it's that coupled with, you know, 10 other things that they have to deal with and kind of relocating that it just kind of slows them down. And you may think it's petty, you may think it's a small thing, but you can't deny that people within the tech community are irked by it, and it may turn them off to Indianapolis.
Now, Stutz is 62, which seems ancient in the tech industry from what I know, but apparently he's showing some great results at the Marketing Cloud. Do we have a sense of how long he might stay here? Is there any more room for him to go at the flagpole?
So it's an important position. It's a very important position. And they want to keep somebody, you know, highly qualified, highly motivated in that position. And Bob is that guy. And so they have motivation to keep him here. So that may be one factor that keeps him here a little longer than otherwise could be.
Is there any reason to think that the Stutz will become more involved locally and maybe become more of a public figure, perhaps being an advocate for the local tech community with the legislature, anything like that?
I think he wants to be. Unprompted, he was interviewed by the New York Times about Amazon. You know, he could have said anything. They were asking him a variety of questions, and he really went out of his way to trumpet the virtues of Indianapolis. And if you read that article, one of the quotes is that the economic development and the redevelopment of downtown Indianapolis is the best in the nation that he's ever seen. Now, this is a guy who's traveled globally, has lived globally, is from New York, worked in California, lived in Europe for a number of years on a couple of occasions. He says that's the best, Indianapolis is the best downtown redevelopment he has ever seen. So, I think he's a willing advocate. I think he's a sincere advocate. And I think if Tech Point or the tech community or the city of Indianapolis wanted to leverage him, I believe he'd be a willing participant and a willing cheerleader. Go team.
We could use it. All right, let's leave it here, Anthony. Hey, thanks for the great story.
Hey, really enjoyed it. Hope to be back soon.
My thanks again to Anthony. Hey, before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to give you an update of sorts on a story we discussed a couple of weeks ago. The Indiana Pacers are keen to cut a deal for significant improvements to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And this week, IBJ's Mickey Shuey gets a handle on what those might be by looking at the current state of the art in other NBA venues. The latest trends include creating open club areas for fans to socialize and move around while watching the game instead of confining them to the same seat for four quarters. Fans also expect teams to offer the latest digital features like the ability to easily connect to stats, social media, and streaming video. And the Atlanta Hawks just installed a 360-degree video board over their court as part of a $200 million renovation. You can read all about it in the copy of IBJ you have delivered to your home or, of course, on IBJ.com. As always, thanks for checking out the podcast. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.